We are studying today Genesis chapter 39, and we will read that chapter. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And when his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand, and Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her, or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled, and got him out. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand, and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house, and spake unto them, saying, "See, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice." And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me, and fled, and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her, until his lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, "The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife which she spake unto him, saying, 'After this manner did thy servant to me,' that his wrath was kindled, and Joseph's master took him, and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, and showed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison, and the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper." Now let us consider for a moment or two how we divided the life of Joseph for the sake of our present study. We saw that in Genesis chapter 37, we have Joseph the son. In Genesis chapter 39, it is his service. In chapter 40, it is his suffering. In chapter 41 to 45, his sovereignty. And in chapter 46 to 50, his satisfaction. So, as we turn our attention to Genesis chapter 39, we are dealing with the service of Joseph. Joseph, the servant. I want to look at this in a number of ways. Firstly, we will look at the work which he carried out. Then we will look at the witness which he bore. We will then consider the wickedness which he met. And lastly, we will look at the wisdom which he displayed. So we have the work which he carried out, the witness which he bore, the wickedness which he met, and the wisdom which he displayed. Let us consider now a little bit of the background before we look at these specific points. We will see that this is a further time of testing and trial for Joseph. We have already considered the fact that he had been tried in the field and tried in the home, and now here he is about to be tried in three different ways. In verse 4, he was made overseer over all the house of Potiphar. So firstly, he was tried and tested by promotion. How would he handle promotion? How would he handle elevation in the world? He was tried by promotion. If you look at verse 7, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, we will see that he was tried by temptation. And so this wicked, evil woman sought to tempt Joseph to sin. When we turn our attention to verse 20, we find there that Joseph's master takes him and puts him into prison. And so there he is tried by persecution. So in three different distinct ways, Joseph is tried. And we will see on each of these occasions, he did not succumb. He was still an overcomer. Tried by promotion, tried by temptation, tried by persecution. Let us learn from this a very salutary lesson. And it is just as servants, we are constantly being put to the test. We are constantly meeting situations that test the reality of what we claim to be. And down in that foreign land of Egypt, Joseph was tried and tested and proved himself to be an overcomer. Now let us look at the work which Joseph carried out. As we look at verse 3, we read these words, "And his master saw that the Lord was with him." It is good to keep in mind that the Lord was with Joseph. Verse 2, we read that the Lord was with Joseph. And in verse 3, this becomes obvious to his master, Potiphar. So in verse 3, as a servant, we look at his approval. He was an approved servant. His master saw that all that he did, the Lord made it to prosper in his hand. And so we are dealing with an approved servant. Says the Apostle Paul to Timothy, "Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." Here it is Joseph, whose work shows him to be an approved servant. But if that is his approval, we must look at his attitude. He had been the favorite son in the house of his father. He had been one who had servants serving him, but now he is the servant. And do you see how he submits to that? There is no rebellion in his heart. There is no desire to break loose. There is no desire to escape. There is no plan to be done with Egypt and travel back to Canaan. He submits to whatever the Lord has for him. Serving as a servant shows that his attitude in these things was absolutely correct. But look at his appearance. It says in verse number 6 that Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. In other words, his appearance commended his work. In other words, there was something attractive about his demeanor, something attractive about his manner. He went about his business in a way that commended him. He was not morose. He was not constantly angry. He did not have a complaining temper. No, he was so different from that. He was Joseph, the attractive personality. Let us learn a lesson from that. And it is just that we, by our manner and deportment, ought to commend the gospel. When we turn our attention to the pastoral epistles, that is the first and second epistle to Timothy and the epistle to Titus, we learn a very important lesson. There are two words in the New Testament that are translated good in the English language. If you look very carefully, you will see that one of these words comes to prominence in the pastoral epistles. You will see that one word means good and useful, and the other good and attractive. Now, the word that means good and attractive becomes prominent in the pastoral epistles. Let me give you an example. For instance, in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 8, "But we know that the law is good." When you turn your attention to chapter 1, verse 18, the apostle says there, "that thou by them mightest war a good warfare." Chapter 2, verse 3, "for this is good and acceptable." Chapter 3, verse 1, "if a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth a good work." Chapter 3, verse 13, "for they that have used the office of a deacon well, purchase to themselves a good degree." Further back in that chapter at verse 4, "one that ruleth well," or "in a good way, his own house." Chapter 3, verse 7, "he must have a good report." Chapter 4, verse 6, "thou shalt be a good minister of Jesus Christ." Now that word means good and admirable, or good and attractive, throughout these verses. So Paul is telling us that being a believer ought to be marked by attractive, admirable features. In other words, our deportment, our manner, our way of life ought to have about it an attractiveness which commends the gospel. This is what we find with Joseph in Genesis 39. His appearance, his demeanor, his deportment was attractive. But I want you to notice also, please, his advancement. In verse 5 we read that he is made overseer in the house over all that Potiphar's hand. The Lord blesses the house of the Egyptian because of Joseph. And so, as God blesses him, Joseph advances. In other words, Joseph is still in the hands of God. God is still blessing. God is still acting. And Joseph is still enjoying divine care. So, the work that he carried out, his approval, his attitude, his appearance, his advancement, surely lessons that can be learned for us as we go about the daily round of our work and responsibilities. I would like, however, just to look back over these verses again from a different standpoint. I would like to look at them from the standpoint of the witness which he bore. It is recorded in verse 2 that the Lord was with him, and in verse 3 that his master saw that the Lord was with him. There was no hiding of Joseph's light in a foreign land. He did not attribute his success to his own endeavors, intelligence, education, or ability. It is clear and obvious that he gave God the glory. And here, into the house of Potiphar, there comes a servant whose God was a God who surely was unknown to Potiphar. And yet, his master saw that the Lord was with him. Into the home of Potiphar, there came the knowledge of God at work. What a remarkable witness, born by Joseph. I want you to observe, please, that as the Lord blessed Joseph, for the first time at close hand, Potiphar sees God at work. He had never seen this before. I have no doubt he had never come across anyone who believed in the God of Israel. But now in his own home, there is a man, and Potiphar sees God at work. Let us always remember that in looking at Christians, the world is having a view of how God works. How do we measure up? How do we stand up to that test? How do we stand up to that challenge? Joseph bore himself with such spiritual dignity that Potiphar recognized that the Lord was blessing his house. What a witness. Let us make sure that our witness is exactly the same. We witness to God at work. Now I want to consider, thirdly, please, the wickedness which he met. We cannot expect that Satan would let such a state of affairs continue unimpeded. It is his desire to bring to an end any blessing. His maliciousness is such. His hatred is such. His envy is such. That it is always his desire to bring to an end what God is blessing. Wherever God blesses, Satan is interested. Wherever God blesses, Satan seeks to be present. And wherever God blesses, Satan seeks to destroy. This is what he is doing now in the home of Potiphar. And as an instrument in his hand to achieve his evil designs, he has Joseph's master's wife. I want you to notice, please, three things about this time of temptation which was endured by Joseph. Observe firstly, please, that the temptation was attractive. There is nothing in the book that would suggest that this woman was not an attractive woman. It is clear that she was a sensuous woman, and it is clear that she was an unfaithful wife. But nevertheless, on a sensual level, she was obviously an attractive woman, and the suggestion came from her. So she was a forward woman. So, this sensuous, attractive, forward, unfaithful woman is brought before Joseph in order to trip him up. She, of course, had a position of authority over him. She was Potiphar's wife. And she would expect the servants to regard her as being in control. She would anticipate that such an offer as she made to Joseph would be regarded as an honour. So, she makes the offer. She spreads the suggestion before him. Here he is, alone in the house with a beautiful woman. That's a dangerous place to be. Alone with somebody else's wife in a house. Alone in a house with a beautiful woman who is not your wife. A very dangerous position in which to find yourself. And she makes the suggestion. Joseph refuses. And from that time forward, he is very careful about what he does. But this was an attractive suggestion. I want to press home to you the fact that Satan's temptations always on the surface appear to be most attractive. In our earlier studies in the book of Genesis, we saw how attractive the first temptation would appear to Eve in the Garden of Eden. How attractive down through these chapters, as we have considered this book, the temptations of Satan appear to have been the easy answer to a difficult problem. The possession of powers which, if God is obeyed, will never be your own. Over and over again, Satan has made apparently attractive suggestions, and to yield to them always has resulted in disaster. And here is Joseph, far away from home, alone with this attractive woman. If he agrees to her suggestion, who is to know? If he agrees, who is to see? It will be their secret shared by no one, Joseph and Potiphar's wife. But Joseph realized that much more was hanging in the balance. His testimony, all that he had been, all that those dreams had told him of, all that was hanging now in the balance if he listened to this siren voice of this voluptuous, unfaithful, sensuous woman. A moment's pleasure, and all life to regret it. Joseph apparently never even considered the issue. He dismissed it. I want you to notice, please, he dealt very correctly. He refused. And he said, "My master doesn't know what I do in the house, and he's committed all that he hath to my hand, and he's given everything into my hand apart from thee. How can I do this great wickedness?" Now, do you notice what he says? "And sin against God." So he is reminding her of his God, and reminding her that such an action is not only wickedness, but is great wickedness. How many have been trapped in a situation like this, and instead Joseph like in fleeing, they have fallen and succumbed to the dulcet tones of the temptress. It may even be a woman who has submitted to the tones of the tempter. So, the wickedness he met, firstly, it was attractive. Secondly, I want you to observe that it was persistent. In verse 9 we read, "And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day." So constantly, every day, he was presented with this plea. It didn't go away. Satan is persistent. He keeps at it. He will not let up. He will not let go. It's constant. "Come," she says to him every day. Nobody knows. But he hearkened not unto her. As a matter of fact, it is recorded that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. He sought to avoid her company. He sought not to be in her presence. In other words, he was ensuring that as much as lay within him, he would not put himself into the place of temptation. But it was a persistent temptation. So, it was attractive, it was persistent, and I want you to notice, we have already indicated it, but let us emphasize, it was resisted. It was resisted. Every day, he proved himself to be an overcomer. He proved himself to triumph over evil. Even that day when she caught him by his garment, he fled and got him out of the house, leaving behind only the garment that was held in her hand. She lies. She is a woman spurned. In her anger, in her rage, she calls unto the men of the house. Then, having told them her lies, she puts the garment beside her, nurses her wrath until her husband comes home. And then again, this cold, persistent anger is seen. Not just a sudden rage that died away, but a fixed determination to harm Joseph. She tells her husband, and Joseph is consigned to prison. Why did he not tell Potiphar the truth? He had no evidence. It was her word against his. It would put Potiphar into a very difficult situation. So rather than protest his innocence, Joseph leaves his vindication in the hands of his God and down into prison he went. Now I want you to notice the wisdom which he displayed. When he was reviled, he reviled not again. We have already said that. He did not turn and revile her. When he suffered, he threatened not. There was no threatening from his hands. And of course, as a result of displaying this wisdom, in due course, he was exalted in due time. The pathway of the Lord's servants is sometimes one when circumstances seem incomprehensible. Even in prison, Joseph prospers. The keeper of the prison commits to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. So he in prison shows again that the Lord is with him, that God is blessing him, and he is now responsible for the prison. How would Potiphar's wife feel about that if ever she knew about it? I know not. But Joseph, now in prison, is suffering for righteousness' sake. As he languished in prison, Joseph must have looked back over the past few years. He would remember the day when his father gave him the coat of many colours. Perhaps he would call to mind the day when he had brought the evil report to his father. I'm sure he would always have in mind the day when his dreams revealed to him the others bowing before him. Everything in the early part of his life seemed to be going just the right way. Progress beckoned. The prime place in the family seemed to be established for him. Things seemed to be going the way that he would have wished them to go. But then, the hatred of his brethren, incarceration in the pit, sold as a slave, deceived and mistreated by Potiphar's wife, languishing in prison. It seems that for a long time, nothing had gone right. Everything seems now to be going the wrong way. Early promise seems to have been set aside. Disaster and disappointment is now the common currency of his life. What a difference from wearing the coat of many colours in the house of his father to languishing in an Egyptian prison, condemned for a crime of which he was innocent. And yet, did this raise doubts in his mind? And yet, did this cause him to wonder and stumble? Remember John Baptist in prison. As he looked around the prison cell, and as he thought of his own preaching, and the crowds who had flocked to hear him and be baptized at the Jordan, and then turning his eyes to the prison cell, somehow or other it didn't all add up. He could not reconcile the present with the promise of the message that had been his. And so he sent to the Lord Jesus the messengers, "Art thou he that should come, or look we for another?" Remember the Apostle Paul, languishing in a prison cell in Rome. Was it all worth it? So much seems to have been going wrong, and yet he says, "I'm here for the furtherance of the gospel." And Joseph The early promise has never been realized. Things have not gone as he may have expected them to go. And it may be today that I'm speaking to someone just in circumstances like that. Things have not gone as you expected them to go. Early promise has given way to bitter disappointment. Early dreams were never realized. Early spiritual ambitions were never attained. And now it seems to be that everything is wrong. Remember this. Joseph never lost his confidence in his God. We will see that even more clearly in a further lesson, if the Lord will. Joseph did not lose his confidence in his God. John Baptist did not lose his confidence in his God. It was to the Lord Jesus he sent the message, and the word came back, "Go and tell John, it's all happening now, John. You may not see it, but it's taking place." Paul never lost his confidence in his God. It was for the furtherance of the gospel. He was there as part of the great plan, God's work of redemption. And so it may be that you today are feeling the darkness and pessimism of spiritual depression, that things have not gone as you expected them to go. Take heart, for God is still on the throne. Do you observe a little word that is found in the 21st verse of chapter 39? It says this, that even in prison the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. If you look at the margin, you will see the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness unto him. So even in the prison, Joseph knew the kind graciousness of God. And even in prison, Joseph knew kindness and care and a gracious touch from God when there would be little, if anything, from anyone else. And it was surely this that encouraged Joseph and kept Joseph during those dark days in the prison. The Lord extended kindness towards him. Now, I want you to observe something else from this chapter. You may ask the question, why was all this necessary? Why was it necessary for Joseph to go to the house of Potiphar and then down into the prison cell? Why was it necessary? Could he not just have been taken directly to the throne of Egypt, or could he not have been given a good position in Egypt and remained there without having to endure the prison cell? Well, I will suggest one reason why it was necessary. There will come a day when Joseph will be responsible for the government of Egypt. There will come a day when the care and consideration of the Egyptian nation will be in the hands of this man. It will be given to him to preserve their food stores and to distribute that food in days of famine. He will hold their lives in his hand. Two lessons we learn. Firstly, this, that he who would rule over others must know what it is to be a servant. He that would be first shall be servant of all. That is true in the sense that if I desire to be first, I will become servant of all. But if I desire to be a servant of all, the Lord will make me first. And so, he who would rule over others must himself learn how to be ruled. A good ruler must firstly have been a good servant. A good master must firstly have known what it is to carry out instructions well. So firstly, Joseph had to go through this because he who rules must know what it is to be ruled over. I want you to notice secondly, please, that it was necessary for Joseph to go through this because of the teaching and experience which would be his. He is learning how to administer things in the land of Egypt, from the highest to the lowest. There could be no greater contrast than the house of Potiphar and the prison. As we have said, he had moved from one of the grandest, highest homes in the land down to the prison cell, one of the lowest. And in both spheres, he is the steward or administrator. So, he has learned what it is to administer in these two completely differing environments in the land of Egypt. What was common to both of them was that they were Egyptian. And therefore, Joseph is learning at first hand the skills of Egyptian government. Let me say again, if I am speaking to someone who knows the despair and disappointment of the present, it may be that this is a time of education in the school of God, when lessons are being learned that will be of value in future days, when lessons are being learned that will mold you and make you what God intends you to be, so that your service for Him in the future will be effective and enhanced by the experiences through which you are passing now. God was molding Joseph, teaching him, making him, and it may be that God is doing that very same thing to you. If you had asked someone looking on, "Is this what is happening to Joseph?" they would have said, "Never. He's finished. He's a criminal. Sought to assault his master's wife. He is a prisoner. He'll never get out. His day is finished." But behind all that, God was working. And no matter how men looked on, God was preparing his servant for a coming day of crisis that would change things out of all recognition. Thus, Joseph submits quietly, efficiently he works, cast upon his God, seeking not to vindicate himself, desiring not to justify his own actions, but committing himself to his God, he waits on the day which surely he knows one day will dawn, when out of the prison he will come, and then he will learn the reason. He will learn the reason why. This is the end of side B of this tape.